Welcome to the podcast of the Evidence to Impact Collaborative at Penn State. Utilizing rigorous analysis and data-driven approaches, the scientists of the collaborative, working with government partners and others outside of academia, aim to bridge the gap between research insights and real-world solutions, with the ultimate aim to support the utilization of scholarly research in evidence-based policymaking and to improve lives here in Pennsylvania and beyond. Each month, we highlight research that leverages evidence for relevance to policymakers. I'm Michael Donovan, the Director of Policy and Outreach at Penn State's Administrative Data Accelerator. In this episode,
I'll be talking with Mr. David Saunders and Dr. Alexis Santos. Mr. Saunders serves as the Director of the Office of Health Equity within the Pennsylvania Department of Health and joins us from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Dr. Santos is Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies here at University Park and researches social disparities in stress, health, and mortality. Dr. Santos is also a demography data fellow with the Penn State Administrative Data Accelerator. First off, thank you both for taking the time to speak with me today.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
So I just wanted to kind of start this off kind of discussing in broad strokes what some of the work that we've done, collaboration with the Data Accelerator and the Office of Health Equity, in particular, Alexis, some of your work identifying the associations between higher poverty levels and lower life expectancy in Pennsylvania.
Sure. So we got a petition from Mr. Saunders asking us to look at potentially replicating an analysis that was published in a prestigious journal, but specifically for the case of Pennsylvania. So what we did was access the data for Pennsylvania through the United States Census Bureau, mm-hmm. the Institute of Health Metrics, and we were able to reproduce that analysis, and our findings were quite interesting, and I know we'll go into detail later on, but you know, it's looking at what are the correlates or the associations between socioeconomic characteristics of the counties of Pennsylvania and life expectancy, which can potentially help us address disparities across the state from a policy perspective.
That's great. And one thing, David, we really want to, you know, look at this through the lens of how many social determinants of health adversely affect vulnerable communities. So can you just give us a little bit on what your office does and your mission and how this intersects with some of Alexis's good work here?
I definitely can. Our office focuses in on vulnerable communities throughout the state, not just racial and ethnic minorities, but those that are in many cases disenfranchised, impoverished, rural communities, as well as urban communities. And we collaborate across the board with other state agencies, county groups to educate, mostly look at ways to collaborate along policy lines, along systems, any way that we can possibly do to make the citizens of Pennsylvania the most healthy as they possibly can be.
Great. And as we have identified through Alexis's work, you really looked at several variables of socioeconomic perspective, right?
Yeah. So from a social determinants of health perspective, you would hypothesize or you would think that there's a certain number of characteristics that put people or groups at different odds or probability of having higher or lower life expectancy. And for example, some of those are characteristics that are things we acquire, like education level. And we have, certainly there's barriers to achieving or attaining a higher level of education. And of course, we know that education and higher levels of education places you in a better position to have a better income down the road. So this perspective, what allows us to do is frame or start looking at the variables that we can start studying correlations across the state. And again, some of these groups that Mr. Saunders mentions are groups that have not only one of these characteristics, but they may share areas of them. So for example, lower education attainment has been associated with higher poverty rates in areas across the nation and around the world. So what this analysis allowed us to do was to do a sort of a scratch the surface of the problem by looking at associations at the county level of these various characteristics, like, for example, household income, persons who have a health insurance, and we know that income is a strong determinant of having a health insurance in the United States, whether or not the person is employed or not, whether or not there's a high concentration of poverty at the county. So framing this analysis from the social determinants of health allowed me to identify which variables could have a potential link with life expectancy differences in the state, and that's how I approached the problem so that we could produce this report.
That's fascinating, especially because it's really applying a rigorous analytical framework to, as we said earlier, to what has been a national model in the past and has not really looked at individual states and what Pennsylvania in particular, what story the data tells here. So I want to talk a little bit about, first off, the results. And, you know, there's we won't go into the whole details of Alexis's excellent, you know, 14-page report to the Office of Health Equity. But we just want to talk about some top-line items that, unfortunately, I think are probably expected to some extent. But what is really important is what this work can do to support potential policy mitigation efforts in the future.
So I guess I'll provide the data, and I think David could talk more about what may be some specific cases of these cases that I'll mention. But so we found that for the state of Pennsylvania, we had a high life expectancy in counties such as Centre County, Union County, Chester County, Pike County, and Montgomery County, which were counties that were identified as having more than 80 years as life expectancy at birth. Centre County is quite an interesting case because we have a lot of students. Mm-hmm. So we have to think well about how we're discussing life expectancy in this regard.
And I'll say right there for those listening elsewhere, Centre County is the county that Penn State University is based in, a University Park campus, while we have the 21 Commonwealth campuses throughout the state.
Yes. So I think what was concerning to us was also that we saw differences in life expectancy, oftentimes a gap of as big as 6 years. And some of these counties include Philadelphia County, Forest County, Fayette County, Sullivan County, and Schuylkill County.
It's a tough one.
Yes. And so I don't know if David have any perspectives on this last five that I've mentioned. But, you know, from my perspective, we know what is Philadelphia County, but what about the others, David? What can you tell us something about them?
Well, you know what's interesting? Even a couple of the municipalities that you mentioned, like Montgomery County, one thing we need to be mindful of, even those counties in some cases that have a high life expectancy, they're doing well, from an overall health outcome standpoint, they may have municipalities within them that are not doing so well. So like a Montgomery County has a Norristown, those pockets of, in many cases, racial and ethnic minorities that tend to not fare as well as the overall county. So I did want to pull that out. You mentioned those counties like a Philadelphia, like a Fayette, like a Schuylkill County. You know, those rural counties like Fayette and Schuylkill counties, in many cases, of course, the industries that really supported individuals in those counties are not as prevalent as they used to be. Fayette is pretty far away from the center of the state. In many cases, those rural counties are not doing well. Then you come back to a Philadelphia. Very much so. It's a tale of two portions of the county, of two portions of the city. You have a center city, Philadelphia, that in many cases have a higher income level. You go outside of center city, Philadelphia, into north and west Philadelphia, where there's a lower income level, and those are the areas of Philadelphia County that have a lower life expectancy, poorer health outcomes. And it could be the difference between, you know, living to 78 years of age or 68. I mean, it's that vast of a difference within, you know, 2 to 5 miles away. So it's a stark difference depending upon where you live in the state of Pennsylvania. The same way across the country, those pockets of impoverished individuals, those are the areas where they're faring the worst from a health outcome standpoint.
Yeah, and you know, particularly if you were thinking about this as a social determinant of health, it may be possible that this, you know, these counties that I mentioned with low life expectancy, it may be that the social enclaves or the characteristics of the populations themselves are quite different. So, for example, Philadelphia County may have a diverse population, but it may be dealing with, you know, homelessness. Or, yeah. And some other counties may be dealing with the shortage of access to care.
Sure. Yeah, and as David, you were talking, I couldn't help thinking about, you know, the remarkable spillover effects from impoverishment and lower income levels, and how this, you know, no specific variable exists in a vacuum, and all of these areas are going to be blending and touching into each other. So there's a higher drain on social services in many of these areas, which are already dealing with a lower tax base in many circumstances. So I was wondering what, you know, as you work throughout the state, are there particular tools in your toolbox that you try to lift up to support vulnerable communities across the gamut in particular?
We have several. One is something that we call Public Health 3.0, and that's at the county level. We try and bring around the same table those representatives that either, either from education or from housing, government, and health, and we want to break down those silos. We develop health coalitions at the county level, if you will, and we make sure that we work with them to ensure they're focusing in on, you know, those, you know, priorities like obesity and tobacco and substance abuse and diabetes management, as well as oral health. And we provide technical assistance, access, funding where possible, and we connect them to a variety of different, you know, agencies and organizations that could support their effort. We also have something called the Pennsylvania Interagency Health Equity Team. We're the first and actually only state in the entire country that has a team made up of state agencies meeting on a regular basis, looking at policies, looking at systems, looking at environmental changes that affect those social determinants of health across the board. So we have, for instance, transportation, the departments of transportation, education, and economic development, and aging, all around the table, trying to get the resources to the counties and to those municipalities across the state so they could address their own local needs. So we have the top level agencies, you know, state level, getting down to that more county and community level. We're trying to connect the two. So that's just two of our programs, if you will.
That's great. And I've been a part of the PIHET meetings, as they're known, or PHET sometimes, the Pennsylvania Interagency Health Equity Team. David has graciously invited Penn State around the table, and it really is a remarkable collection of kind of an innovative technique throughout the states, modeled after the federal system. And I think it's been really powerful in connecting people.
So now that we've discussed PACE, I was wondering if you guys wanted me to tell you about these variables that we found that were associated with life expectancy. So I'll go one by one, and maybe we can kind of like play ping pong with this. Mm-hmm. But for example, we found a strong correlation between life expectancy at the county level. And again, I think later on, I think David's comment is on point. Maybe we need to start looking at more smaller units. And mm-hmm. this may be something that we can do through the accelerator with the restricted data that we have. you know, at the county level, what we found was a strong correlation between high poverty rate and low life expectancy, as we would expect from the social determinants of health model. We found that the median household income, which may actually be sort of another way of measuring how much, you know, how's your socioeconomic status, that also is correlated with life expectancy. So if you had a higher income, you were the county was more likely or correlated with a higher level of life expectancy. And the last one in this income category variable that we found that was interesting was the median house value. So for owner-occupied houses, which it means that if houses of a higher value at the county level were associated, or price was associated with a higher life expectancy. So these are three variables that are letting us study differences in life expectancy with different focus. One is individual income, the other one is household income, which may be pulling resources together from the whole family. And the other one is just kind of a measure of wealth, is the house that you own. And the three of them are giving us consistent patterns of the better off this number is, the better the life expectancy of the county is.
Let's Mike, if you don't mind, let's talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely.
In areas like, let's say Harrisburg, you have lower levels of individuals who own their home. If you own a home, you pay taxes on that home. The taxes that you pay on that home contribute to the school district, the local school district. If you don't have that tax base, your educational system is deprived. They're deprived of resources, computers, warm facilities or cool facilities in the summer, books, training for teachers, extracurricular activities. It's not a surprise that in areas that are impoverished, you have lower high school, education. There are lower numbers of individuals that graduate from high school, lower numbers of individuals that graduate from high school in 4 years, which is a health equity measure. It's no surprise that, let's say, in Center County, where the levels of education is higher, you know, there's a higher numbers of individuals who own homes. It's not all these things are connected. If I have a higher income, no matter what the person's skin color is, if I have a higher income, I'm going to have access to, you know, better grocery stores. In some areas of this state, there are food deserts where you don't have access to, you know, a Giant or a White. In some cases, you're going to the dollar store. And at the dollar store, which there are more dollar stores than there are Walmarts and Targets combined, they have a dearth of perishable food. So you're not going to get fruits, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables. In the rural community, you have a lack of medical facilities. In many cases, emergency rooms are the first place that people go to when their sickness is at a level where they have to go to the emergency room. It's a cycle that is both prevalent in the urban communities such as Philadelphia, as well as some of the outlying rural areas. And one of the things that I try to make sure that people understand is, while there are some racial and ethnic issues, discrimination, racism is clearly an issue in this state as well as across the country. There are rural populations made up of our white Americans that are dealing with some of those same issues as it relates to these social determinants of health and lack of income, and those areas need to be addressed just as much as the urban areas of the state.
Yeah,
and it all comes back to income. When it boils down to it, all comes back to a lack of income and opportunity.
And it's, so you mentioned the spatial differences, right? The urban spaces versus rural. So the other two variables that we found a strong correlation with life expectancy was actually female-headed households, which also means that one person is pooling resources by herself or himself to provide. And also, talking about this spatial urban-rural difference, you know, we found that the highest percent of population, 65 years old, so counties that have a higher concentrations of older adults have lower life expectancy, and this may speak of a kind of the rural component of Pennsylvania and the need for us to start addressing also the necessities and the health necessities of those areas as we move forward in the policy discussion.
Yeah, I have to think. I mean, this all kind of leads us to the point where we all agree, right? That these are all the spillover effects of a system that all affects each other. And what I love to do is talk about, you know, some of the implications for this work going forward, and you know how we can be supportive of the mission of the Office of Health Equity and overall government as well. Realizing that it is a complicated and very stratified problem.
Yeah, I'll chime in there. I think the work that Dr. Santos did is an example of what agencies like ours really would love to do, but don't necessarily have the time to do. We have epidemiologists on staff, but in many cases, they're connected to federal grants and that type of thing. So they have to do specific things. But there are some times where we have a great need to look at one area or another that's not in a long-term plan under a specific grant. And the work that Dr. Santos did really gave us an opportunity to kind of look at a particular issue. And we use that information to help us develop a financial health forum. We had three planned. Unfortunately, we were only able to hold one over this past fall, where we looked at the impact of poverty on health. I think engaging students would be ideal. You know, having interns coming from Penn State and schools like Penn State. I think there are some things that we could teach students that they can't necessarily learn in the classroom. I think, looking down the line at some of, huge issues. I know Penn State is doing a lot of work around the opioid epidemic, but there's burgeoning issues really have been on the table for many years around infant mortality, maternal mortality. I know Penn State is helping us out kind of looking at telehealth, and really what I'm hopeful of, going forward to accelerate the improvement of health is really to engage, universities like Penn State and really looking forward, kind of looking backwards to a certain extent and how did we get to this point, but really looking forward, looking at the data that we currently have available to us, filling in gaps where we don't have data, and really accelerating, processes to improve health, kind of looking forward with the resources that Penn State has available to them. To me, we should really be looking, based upon what we currently have in regards to data, at what we should expect in 5 to 10 years, as opposed to in 10 years reacting to what we could possibly be looking at today in the way of changing some policy systems and environment based upon the data that will tell us what's going to happen in 10 years.
That's right. Yeah. And I really like your focus on data, because what really made this work possible was the availability of the data that Alexis was able to, you know, analyze using these 14 variables to identify some of these correlations. And that's one thing that we here at Penn State and at the Penn State Administrative Data Accelerator and the Social Science Research Institute are really focusing on lifting up as much and as many data sources as possible to try to draw these inferences that are really trying to bridge the gap between an academic discussion, which focuses on knowledge creation and moving forward the science, and bridging that gap into a policy discussion where we can try to support and educate policymakers to utilize an evidence base that's rigorously sought after.
And also to accentuate and sort of support what David said, academic research takes time to get out and get published if we send it out to an academic journal. So I think precisely the fact that the center is accelerating these analyses and making them available to policymakers on a timely manner, it's potentially one of the greatest assets that we have here. And if we leverage collaborations with David's office, the Office of Health Equity, or with other, you know, offices across the state, they'll find that if we were to submit this to a peer-reviewed journal, they'll be getting an article in a year and a half.
Yeah.
And nowadays, academics are starting to look at more creative ways to disseminate the results in a timely manner. And, you know, creating these policy briefs or reports that are easy and accessible for people to read, it's one way. And I think that the important fact here is that this is a data analysis that is addressing social issues in a timely manner. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about a problem from 7 years ago.
Right.
We're talking about policy issues that are being addressed as we speak.
Yeah. Yeah. This is no postmortem. It's very much meant to be a future thinking perspective. And I couldn't further echo the differences in timeline. I'm sure that David can understand that as well with a variety of different timelines that are placed upon him and other levels and policymakers that. And really, the timeliness issue is a big issue we need to improve upon.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we need this information yesterday. I mean, there's just so much to be done, and to have a credible, you know, academic institution like a Penn State that basically is not David Saunders coming up with this information. It's a Penn State verifying this data, coming up with the data, and we're just, you know, kind of displaying it and using it to make you know, changes. I think that's a key. Folks are not going to necessarily argue the validity of the information that comes from an organization, an academic institution like Penn State.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you know, we're able to kind of provide some bona fides to lift up this work. And, you know, one thing that I think is a bit of a taboo concept in a lot of science is that some science is not very good out there. So we need to be sure that we're lifting up rigorous analyses that have real-world implications and try to connect the dots between the different players. And that's what I think this piece has been a pretty good example of that. And we're trying to find ways to expand that across different domains and areas.
And I think one thing that I would say is that one thing I appreciated when the position from David came was that he already had a roadmap for us. Mm-hmm. He said, listen, there's this analysis done at the national level. I want to know if this applies to Pennsylvania. So he provided us as much of a blueprint from what he wanted. And from there, it was really easy to get the data and perform the analysis and write the report. And one thing that, you know, although this is not peer review per se, there were many iterations of this analysis. I sent you a report, you looked mm-hmm. at it, you made it a policy brief. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not like there's no internal checks within the
data. Of course, yeah. I think that's, that is as you alluded to, Alexis, the conversation about disseminating work in the academic field now is changing. The metrics of success are not just the most credible papers the papers in the most credible journals or impact factors all the time. It's thinking about how do we move forward, not just the science, but also the conversation. I think that that takes a lot more strategic effort at times, no doubt about that. I wanted to talk just a little bit about just leveraging data in general is not necessarily a foregone conclusion in many circles. That's one thing that we are trying our best to lift up. That evidence-based policymaking is a route that provides for seasoned approaches that can improve efficiency both in government dollars, but also in effectiveness of programs. So I wonder if you guys, you know, if David, you had any insights on, you know, the climate in government, you being on the front lines, you know, what the data culture is, and hopefully if some perceptions of the future.
Well, I mean, I hear it all the time that we don't have enough data, that the data that we have is not shared. The data that we have as different agencies are not easily accessible and not in one place. It drives, or it should drive, our decisions going forward. But we kind of, over the years, I mean, this is historical, we've always kept, you know, our data to ourselves. So, and even internally, sometimes it's not easy to find data. So I believe that data will always be needed. People like myself, you don't have a lot of time to go find it. You know, I deal with a couple of different folks within our EPI department here that I count on to not only give me the data, but I need from time to time someone to kind of break that data down for me. Someone like a Dr. Santos who can say, okay, well, here's the data, but this is what the data me, as opposed to me trying to figure that out. So I see a need across the board with various agencies, and even to get that information out from the agencies out to the public and at that local community level, and getting that data from the community level up to even the state agency level. So to answer your question, I really believe that it's a need that will continue to be present. The more coordination that we have around data, the more dissemination, the better.
Yeah, so I want to echo some of the things that David said. And what I'll say regarding this discussion of using data, using administrative data, I have two broad points. One is the plural of anecdotes is not data. So we may hear that one or two or three persons say, I had this experience. And we need to see whether or not the data support those narratives. I mean, both pieces of data are important, but we need to reconcile what's being told to us with the data that we have available for analysis. Because if those two don't match, something's happening. And this brings me to another point, which is the three fundamental pillars of being able to leverage administrative data to help policy and decision-making. And one of them is access to data. The second one is having reliable sources. And number three is having those results available for people to use, right? And oftentimes what we find is a barrier to access to the data. And it may stem from a variety of reasons, like a government officer, not from Pennsylvania, but you know, any government officer may think that by sharing data, they may be evaluating him. Mm-hmm. And it's happened to me when I ask government officers for some data, they say, are you going to make me look bad?
Right.
And that's not the case. The case is we want to evaluate what's happening so we can better inform decision-making processes. Mm-hmm. And I think kind of David and I are on the same page on this. If we have data available and we can use it to inform decision-making and also to inform ourselves of what's happening around us, mm-hmm. I think that's a gain right there. If it translates into policy, that's super gain. Mm-hmm. But just by starting to do these efforts, we're already doing something different and something meaningful.
That's right. And that really speaks to a culture of data in a lot of government spaces, I feel, that I think has been kind of a patchwork quilt of application and development. You know, some areas and some levels of government, some agencies have been very forward thinking in embracing a data culture, one where evaluation does not necessarily mean someone's in trouble. It means maybe tightening efficiency and improving metrics is a powerful tool. But I think that's a very good point, Alexis. Thank you. Well, I just want to really thank both of you for your time today. I think that this is really an important intersection and great potential for future work, hopefully a great model for future application in a variety of other areas where really bringing in the academic perspective and also their practitioner government perspective and trying to bridge that gap as much as we can. So again, thank you very much, Dr. Alexis Santos, and also Mr. David Saunders from Pennsylvania government. Really appreciate it.
Many thanks to my guests. Again, I'm your host, Michael Donovan, the Director of Policy and Outreach at Penn State's Administrative Data Accelerator, where we collaborate with interdisciplinary teams to support the utilization of scholarly research in evidence-based policymaking. This podcast is supported by the Social Science Research Institute, the Clinical and Translational Science Institute, the Administrative Data Accelerator, the Office of the Vice President for Research, and the College of Health and Human Development.